Brachos Daf Lamed Vav. We are on Lamed Hamed Beis. We are about 7 lines from the bottom of the Amud, continuing our discussion of Birchos Hananin. Yesterday we started the 6th parak of the Masechta. We were introduced to the idea of Birchos Hananin. The Mishnah gave us a listing of brachos that are said over various growth that comes out of the ground. Mishnah divided into two basic categories, Birchos Ha'ilan and Birchos Ha'adama. Birchos Ha'ilan, fruit from the tree, where the brachos Borei Pri Ha'Eitz. Birchos Ha'adama, fruit coming from the ground, we would describe as vegetables, but in other words, the bulbs that come out of the ground. So the bracha for those items are Borei Pri Adama. Two notable exceptions. When it comes to the Peres Ha'ilan, one notable exception is the grapes. The grapes themselves are going to be a Borei Pri Ha'Eitz, but when produced to wine, so the bracha is going to be a Borei Pri Ha'Gafen. By the Peres Ha'Adama, similar scenario in which notable exception is going to be the wheat. On the wheat itself, the bracha is going to be a Borei Pri Adama, but if it is converted into a bread, it'll upgrade to a Hamotz Lechem in Aretz. That's the Mishnah we learned yesterday, and the Gemara now is going to have a discussion regarding olive oil. Gufa, the Gemara starts off the discussion. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, V'chein Amar Rav Yitzchak, Amar Rav Yochanan, Shemen Zayis, Mevarchin Al Borei Pri Ha'Eitz. When it comes to olive oil, the bracha is going to be a Borei Pri Ha'Eitz. Hechi Dami, the Gemara wants clarification on this point. Dilemi de Gashasilei. So the Gemara says, are we talking about a scenario in which you're just going to be drinking the olive oil straight? Uzuke mazikle. That's very damaging. And since it's damaging, so therefore, it would not require a bracha. The simple pshat of the Gemara is that it wouldn't require a bracha at all, meaning despite the fact that it's a food, but because it doesn't serve any kind of benefit whatsoever, and in fact, just the opposite, it's damaging. So then, with seemingly, the Gemara's point is that no bracha is required. Interesting, the Rambam over here writes that the bracha over olive oil straight is going to be a shahakol. How does he read the Gemara over here? A discussion in of itself, but meanwhile we continue in the Gemara. The Tanya. Gemara now is going to quote a brisa that's going to support this idea that drinking olive oil is not considered a shesiyah. It's not considered drinking. Hashos Hashem and Shel Truma. The brisa over here is describing somebody who is not a Kohen, who is going to be imbibing olive oil of Truma. The halacha is that anything of truma has to be eaten by a kohen, can only be eaten by a kohen. If it's eaten by a non-kohen, if done so b'mezid, so you chayv misa b'dei shamayim. If it's done b'shogeg, so you have to make restitution. If it was consumed b'shogeg, so you have to pay the principal value of that which you consumed, and you also have to add a chomesh on top of that, another 25%. So Hashos Hashem and Zayin Shel Truma, if a person were to drink the olive oil of Truma, Mishalim is a Karen, so you pay for the Karen, V'ena Mishalim is a Chomesh, but you don't pay Chomesh. Now the reason why, explains Rashi, is because you are simply a Mazik. That's not considered consumption, that's just considered damaging, and therefore you're only paying back that which you damaged. However, Hasach Hashem and Shel Truma, Mishalim is a Karen, Mishalim is a Chomesh. If you rub it into your skin, that is considered normal consumption, natural consumption of the olive oil. And as a result of that, you're going to have to now make restitution, both the principal value and the chumash. Clearly, this price is teaching us that the drinking of the olive oil is not considered achila, but the rubbing into skin is considered achila. And so therefore, Ella, the Gemara says, Dika achole. So where are we going to come to a circumstance in which one is going to be making a Borei Pri Ha'Eitz on olive oil, because drinking it by itself is not considered drinking. That is masik, it's damaging. And so what would be the scenario in which you would be making a Borei Pri Ha'Eitz on the olive oil? So the Gemara makes an attempt. Well, maybe you ate the olive oil together with bread. You dip bread into your olive oil. To which the Gemara says, Well, then we get to a classic discussion of Vikar V'Tafel. Two foods that are mixed together where there is a primary food and secondary food. And Tanan, and we're going to learn this in the Mishnah later on in our Perek Zakah, Kol Shehu Ikar V'Imot Tefela. If you have two foods together where one's an Ikar and the other is a Tefel, Mevarch Al HaIkar Poter Satefela. You only make a bracha on the Ikar, you don't make a bracha on the Tefela. So in this circumstance of bread and olive oil, you for sure will be making a bracha only on the bread and not on the olive oil. So Elo, so the Gemara says, Dekashasi Le Ayda Nigran. So the Gemara makes the following suggestion, and that is to be, it was drunk together with an anigron. And Rashi describes the anigron over here as being some sort of borscht. You took the olive oil and you put it into a stew, either of beets or some other stew. And the Gemara just interjects very quickly, Dama Rabba Bar Shmuel, anigron hum ayah desilka. The anigron itself is maya desilka, not aniskaron, maya de kulushalke. And aniskaron is the stew of all other vegetables. The Gemara just is giving a definition to what these items are. So im kain, so the Gemara says, okay, so even if we're describing a scenario where the olive oil was mixed together with this vegetable soup, so im kain havale anigron ikar v'shemen tafel. So then the anigron becomes the ikar and the shemen becomes the tafel, and we're back to the same problem. Tanan ze'aklal, kol shehu ikar v'imo tefil mevarach l'ikar potos tefil. So we are back to square one, in which we are now back to an ikar v'tafel scenario, and the stew itself is considered the ikar, and the olive oil is considered the tafel. And once again, we would not be making a bracha, bori praits, on the olive oil. So hacham in my skin. So the Gemara says, so what are we describing over here? Bechoshesh begrono. So the Gemara now constructs a scenario in which you're going to be making up a mixture of olive oil and the borscht, but you're going to be doing so for somebody who's got a sore throat. The person who has a sore throat is really interested in the olive oil, and he's going to go very heavy on the olive oil. The way Rashi seems to describe it over here is he's going to be adding more olive oil than there's going to be actual borscht. And so therefore now the ikar v'tafel gets flipped around. The olive oil is now considered the ikar. The borscht is now considered the tafel. And this would be a scenario in which one would be making a bracha of a bor pre'eitz. The Tanya, the Gemara here quotes the Braisa. This Braisa over here is primarily focused on the issue of taking foods which serve as medicine on Shabbos. Hachoshesh begrono, somebody who's got a sore throat, lo yir'ar er b'shemen t'chila b'Shabbos. One is not allowed to gargle olive oil on Shabbos, despite the fact that olive oil is absolutely a food. But on the other hand, if one is gargling it, that's clearly being used for the purposes of medicine. The Chachamim made a general gzera on medicine. Somebody who has a mechash, who has a discomfort, is not to take medicine. A person with a sakana, obviously, is allowed to take a medicine. But somebody with just a mechash, with just discomfort, is not allowed to take medicine. As a result of that, if you're taking anything, even a food, which is clearly being used as a medicine, so that would be an issur d'rabbanan. So gargling the olive oil would be a issur d'rabbanan. And to which the Gemara says, aval no sein shemen harbi l'soch anigron ubolea. But what can do on Shabbos is add the olive oil into the anigron, into the borscht, and swallow it. And at this point in time now, because it's being swallowed and because it's mixed together with the anigron, so therefore it is not serving as a medicine in of itself. And even though there is medicinal value and it has a therapeutic value to it, nevertheless, it's going to be treated like a food, and therefore it could be imbibed on Shabbos. Pshita, the Gemara says, isn't this point obvious? In other words, once we have created a scenario in which the shemen becomes the ikar, and the anigron is a tafel, so then isn't it obvious that the bracha should be a bor pre'eitz? Ma detema, the Gemara says, not necessarily. I might have had the following havamina, kevan, delirafua kamechavim, because really your primary goal is for the therapy and the benefit. Lo livrach ala haklal, maybe no bracha should be made on it altogether, kamash milan. And so the chiddush is, kevan de islei hanamine, since there is nevertheless a benefit from it, so by bruche, so therefore it demands a bracha. So the Gemara has now just established that we do make a bracha bori pri hagafen as it relates, a bori pri ha'etz as it relates to olive oil, despite the fact that it was converted into oil. Nevertheless, the bracha is going to be a bori pri ha'etz. And then the Gemara just simply dealt with the technical issue of what would be a scenario in which you're going to be imbibing olive oil by itself. It's mazik. If I mix it with other foods, the other foods generally are the ikar and the olive oil is the tafel. And so the Gemara did construct a scenario in which the olive oil can in fact become the ikar. Kibcha dechita, the Gemara continues now to discuss another case, and that is flour that is grounded. Wheat that is grounded into flour. And basically the Gemara is going to be describing the consumption of flour. Now eating flour straight is obviously very strange and very difficult to imagine. If you look at Tosfos over here, fourth Tosfos on the Amud. So he writes, Kimcha dechiti nir de lomari bekimcha mamish. We're not talking about flour. The imkein lo shaychi be bracha de bor pri adam. It's not shaych to make a bracha bor pri adam on flour. It's not something which is edible or consumable. Elamari bekimcha shekorin. And Tosfos gives an old French name to describe it. Bekimcha sheosin mishibolishual. Or maybe it's talking about a flour that was made up of oats. Shemi yavshin betanur. That was drawn in the oven. So we're talking about some sort of oven-roasted grain, and the grain itself was also pounded down into flour or bits of the grain. And so the question the Gemara now is presenting is, what bracha are we going to make on this? Going into this question, there are a couple of givens. One is that once flour is made into bread, the bracha is a motzei lechem min ha'aretz, that's a given. Two is that if one were to eat the grain in its natural state, the bracha would be a bor pri adama. So those are the givens that we start with. And now the question is that we have taken now the grain and we have broken it down into pieces. So it's no longer a natural grain in its original state, nor is it a bread. So it's somewhere in between. At this point in time, what will be the correct bracha? Rav Yehuda Amar Bar Pri Adama. So Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that the correct bracha is a Bar Pri Adama as if it were still in its natural state. Rav Nachman Amar Shakol Ni Bidvarim. Rav Nachman, on the other hand, says it's a Shehakol. Amalei Rav Le Rav Nachman. So Rav says to Rav Nachman, Lo Tifla Galei De Rav Yehuda, don't argue with Rav Yehuda. De Rav Yochanan Shmuel Kaimi Kavasa, because two Amoraim, both Rav Yochanan and Shmuel, agreed to the opinion of Rav Yehuda. The Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel V'chein Amar Rav Yitzchak Amar Rav Yochanan Shemen Zayis Be'Mevarchin Al Bar Pri Ha'Eitz. Olive oil, the bracha is Bar Pri Eitz. Ama Afagav Di'ishtane, and what do we see over here? That it went through a change. It was the olive fruit, and then it was pulverized and crushed into olive oil, and yet the bracha maintains as a Bar Pri Eitz. B'Mil Sekai, it remains in the same halachic status. Hachanami here as well. Afa gav di ishtane, even though the flour has changed, meaning it's been crushed and made into flour, bimil sekai, it still has the same status as the original grain itself, meaning the bracha should still be a bor pri adama. Although the Gemara tries to compare the two midama, the Gemara does not like the comparison. They're not really comparable. Hasam over there, leisle iluye achrine. When describing the olive oil, so once the olives has been converted to olive oil, so there is nothing better that it can be turned into. Meaning olive oil is the ultimate food that it can become. But when it comes to the wheat, so actually it still has ways to go in terms of its processing. Meaning as the natural grain itself, so the bracha is bore pri adama, but now that we started processing it, where we ground it down, so now it's on the way to becoming bread. So it's no longer the wheat in its natural state, nor is it yet at the point of bread. So it's in this in-between stage. And so therefore the comparison to the wheat being ground is not a good comparison to that of olive oil being pounded and turned into, the olives being pounded and turning into olive oils. And because the comparison is a weak comparison, the Gemara says we can't use one to draw from the other. V'chi islay ilui achrina, the Gemara says now, if in fact there is a better improvement that could be done to the food. You mean to tell me now that the bracha is no longer bar pri adama, but rather a shahakol? If a person was to eat pumpkin in its raw state, and kimcha de sa'are, or someone were to eat flour of barley, both of these foods, the bracha is going to be shahakol nibidvaro. Now, as far as the raw pumpkin, we're going to see more of this later on in the parak in terms of why it is that the bracha of a raw pumpkin should be a shahakol, but right now our focus is going to be on the barley that was reduced to flour. Now, over here, clearly this brisa tells us that barley reduced to flour is going to be a shahakol. So, my love, dechiti bar pri adama. Now, the Gemara is making a diuk. Why is the brisa specifically choosing the case of barley being pounded into flour and why not wheat? And so ostensibly the reason why is because for wheat, if it's pounded into a flour, the bracha doesn't downgrade to shahakol, but it remains a bor pri adama. Gemara says not necessarily low. Chitinami shahakol ni bidvaro, could be that wheat also, when once pounded into a flour, the bracha would be a shahakol ni bidvaro. Velishme inan dechiti and kol shekein sari. So the Gemara says if that's true, so why not? Why wouldn't the Brisa give me the case of wheat being pounded into a flour? And then for sure the same thing would be true regarding barley. And means to say that if wheat being pounded, the bracha is going to be shahakol, certainly the same thing would be true by barley, which is an inferior grain. Iyash min dechiti, the Gemara says, if we would have said it by wheat, havamina, here's what I might have thought. Hani mile dechiti. The only reason why it's going to get downgraded is because it's wheat. Aval desare, but if it comes to barley, which is reduced into a flour, lo livrech al haklal, I might have thought that no bracha should be said on it whatsoever. Kamash malan. Now that, of course, is an unusual havamina of the Gemara that the Gemara is entertaining right now, that when barley is reduced to flour and I'm eating the barley flour, there'd be no bracha on it whatsoever. In just a moment, the Gemara is going to be a little bit more explanatory in terms of why it is there is no bracha on the, why at least we think that there's no bracha on the barley flour. The Gemara is going to tell us that barley flour is not only just inferior, but it may in fact have negative consequences in terms of eating it. And so at least in terms of a havamina, that's why we might have thought the barley flour has no bracha on it altogether. The Gemara says, can we really make the argument that on barley flour we wouldn't make a bracha? Meaning even as a havamina, how could we even entertain that? Let's take a look at two foods that will be discussed later in this parak, and that's melech and zamis. A salt and some sort of brine. Now, in the Gemara, we have the word ditnan, probably should be ditanya, it's a braisa. Ala melech v'azamis omer shakol nebedvaro. So for one who is to eat salt or this brine, the bracha would be shahakol. And so, even though these are things that are not normally eaten, the bracha is going to be shahakol. So any food, even though it's not normally eating, the bracha should be a shahakol. And this idea that we're at least entertaining the idea that by barley flour, you're not going to be making any bracha whatsoever, not even a shahakol, how could that be? So it's the Rech, the Gemara says, but still, here's how the argument's going to work. Sakadat chamina melch v'zamis, avid inish deshadi lepume. Salt and brine, so it goes into your mouth. Aval kimcha desari, but in terms of barley that's reduced to flour, hol v'kash lekukuyani, it's difficult because it somehow brings about some sort of worms that form in the intestines. L'liver chalei klal. The Gemara's science at the time was that the consumption of barley flour, unprocessed barley flour, would lead to some sort of infestation in the intestines. And so therefore, not only is it tasteless and not only is it not enjoyable, but on top of that, it also has negative effects as well. And that leads us to the havamina, that no bracha should be made on it whatsoever. Kamash malan. And here comes the chiddush. And this is the second time we're hearing this chiddush in today's daf. Kevan di islei hanamine. By bruche. Look, even though there are adverse effects to eating the flour of barley, and even though it is certainly not as tasteful as eating the flour of wheat, but still, when all said and done, you are getting benefit from it. And as a result of that, a bracha is warranted, and you are going to make a bracha shahakol when eating the flour of barley. The Gemara now has concluded its discussion regarding what would be the bracha of ground wheat. Should the bracha be a bari pri adama, or should the bracha be a shakol niya bidvaro? It's a machlokus amongst the Amoraim. Rav Yehuda said bari pri adama, Rav Nachman said shakol niya bidvaro. And the halacha follows like that of Rav Nachman, that the bracha should be shahakol when eating ground wheat. Korei. The Gemara now moves its attention to hearts of palm. Rav Yehuda amar bari pri adama, Ushmol amar shakol niya bidvaro. And here too we have a machlokus Amoraim, exactly what should be the bracha that one makes over the hearts of palm. Hearts of palm, which has become certainly more popular in our generation. But the hearts of palm has been around, obviously, for a long time. And it is the soft shoots that come out of a palm tree. These soft shoots that come out of a palm tree, if left alone, are just simply going to become branches of the palm tree. But at the very early stages of development, these early shoots can be taken off the tree and eaten, otherwise known as hearts of palm. It obviously is a food, and it is a product of a tree. A couple of interesting points. One is that the Gemara is not entertaining, not even for a moment, that the bracha should be a bari prei eats, even though it is a product of the tree. And that's because, and we're going to see this idea express itself a number of times in the course of today's daf, that is because when the bracha bari prei eats is limited to the fruit of a tree, and we can even better define that as the primary fruit of a tree. So a tree may have multiple yields that come off of it, but in terms of the bracha bori priya eitz, the fruit of the tree, so for that we're looking at really its primary yield. And so even though the hearts of palm are a yield that come off of a tree, but it's not the primary part. The primary fruit of the tree obviously is a date. The primary fruit of the palm tree is a date. And so therefore we know what the primary fruit is, and we know which is going to be receiving a bari prei eitz. So even as we discuss the hearts of palm, not for a moment are we going to entertain that the bracha should be a bari prei eitz, but rather it's going to be at most a bari prei adama. Meanwhile, back to our Gemara, the Amoraim are debating exactly what the bracha one should make over the hearts of palm. The second point, which we're going to go over a little bit later on, is that for nowadays, the halacha may be a little bit different in terms of what the bracha should be for hearts of palm, which we're going to explain a little bit better after we go through the sugya. So it's machlokas amarayim, what the bracha is going to be. Again, Rav Yehuda says it's a bari prei adama, and Shmuel says it's shahakol. And Rav Yehuda amar bari prei adama sheperehu. Rav Yehuda's position is predicated on the fact that it is in fact a fruit. And so therefore, the bracha should be a bari prei adama. Shmuel amar shakol ni bedvaro, hol v'sofo lehi kashos. Shmuel, on the other hand, says that the bracha should be a shahakal because if the shoot were to be left alone, it would harden, become inedible, and it would basically become part of the tree. And so therefore, it can't be really registered as a product of the tree, food product of the tree. Amalei Shmuel Rav Yehuda Shinana. So Rav Shmuel says to Rav Yehuda Shinana, which is always a reference to the way he described his student, Kavasech Mistarba, your position seems here to be the most reasonable. Daha, Tznon, Sofali Kashos, consider the radish. If the radish were to be left alone and not to be harvested, so the radish itself also will become hard and inedible. And meanwhile, Mavarchin Ala Bar Pri Adama. Meanwhile, when we take the radish out of the ground, the bracha is going to be a Bar Pri Adama. And so therefore, just because something is going to harden does not seem to be a good enough reason that the bracha should deviate, and the bracha should still be a Bari Pri Adama, and the same thing with the hearts of palm as well. The bracha should be a Bari Pri Adama. And so that's why Rav Yehuda's position over here seems to be the more reasonable position. Despite that, the Gemara ends off by saying Velohi, but it's simply not the case. It's known, Nite Inche Adaita Depula. When it comes to the radish, the reason why people are planting the radish is so that it could be taken in the state of pugla. Pugla is meaning when it's soft and edible. However, dikla, but when it comes to the palm tree, lo nita in she'edaita dekora. People are not planting the palm tree in order to eat the soft shoots. People are planting the palm tree so that they can eat the dates of the palm tree. And so therefore, it is not a fair comparison to compare the radishes of the ground with the shoots, with the soft shoots of the palm tree. And so the Gemara seems over here to side with Shmuel, even though Shmuel himself really enjoyed the svar that went behind the position of Rav Yehuda. Now, as you can see from the Gemara's conclusion over here, in terms of our hearts of palm, the halacha may in fact be different, because our hearts of palm are actually made with the intention of hearts of palm being the end usage of that tree. And so therefore, it may in fact be different, and this is where you consult your local Orthodox Rav in terms of what exactly would the bracha be over our contemporary hearts of palm. Gemara continues, V'chol heicha delo, nati insha edaita dahache, lo mivarchin ala. So the Gemara says, now this rule that we just established, that if you're not planting it for this purpose, so therefore you do not make the bracha on that item, by tzlaf, the Gemara over here turns its attention to the tzlaf. The tzlaf is a tree that we're going to be spending a good amount of time in today's daf describing, and the tzlaf is, in English, translated as a caper bush. The caper bush, as far as the halacha is concerned, as far as the Gemara is concerned, has four edible parts to it. Let's just quickly run over the four edible parts of the tzlaf, and we're going to be discussing all these parts in detail. As far as the main fruit of the tzlaf is concerned, so it is in Hebrew referred to as the evion. We'll be seeing a lot of that over the course of this daf. The evion also had a soft edible shell that went around it that's called the kafrisin. So the evion and the kafrisin are the main fruit and the shell around it. The other parts of the tzlaf that are edible are the alin, the leaves. The leaves are soft and edible. And also the tamaros. The tamaros seemingly are smaller berries that exist on the caper bush. Those are not the main berries, but they are a smaller and edible berry. With all that stated, the Gemara now says that by tzlaf, denita inshe adaita de percha. The reason why it is planted is so that its main fruit is to be consumed. Vitani, we learned on the following brisa. Almine nitzba, refers to the nitzba. Nitzba is a reference to the tzlaf. Al ha'alim va'al ha'tamaros, as far as the leaves and the small berries are concerned, omer bar pri adama, the bracha for them are the bar pri adama. This is consistent with what we saw earlier in the daf, in that when you're looking at a yield of a tree, and it is not the main yield, so although it's edible, and you're going to eat it, and you're going to make a bracha, the bracha is not going to be a bar pri eitz. Bar pri eitz is only reserved for the main yield that comes off of a tree. So therefore, for the leaves, and for the tamaros, and for the small berries, the bracha is bar pri adama. However, al havyonos v'al hakifrisin, omer bar pri eitz. Now, for the main fruit, the evion, and the shell around it, so the bracha is a bar pri eitz. Now, clearly, the intent of planting the tzlaf bush, the caper bush, is only so that you eat the main berries. And meanwhile, as far as the other produce of the caper bush, the bracha is going to be a bar pri adama. And that is not consistent with what we said before. What we said before is that if you're not planting it for that purpose, so then the bracha is going to be a shahakol and not a bar priyadama. That's what we saw regarding the hartzapam. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, tzlaf nita insha adaita di shusa. When it comes to the tzlaf, people plant the tzlaf with the intention of eating also the leaves and the small berries. Meaning the Gemara is just simply saying that our assumption going into the question was a wrong assumption. We assume that there was no intent whatsoever to eat the leaves and the small berries, and the Gemara is simply arguing that that's not in fact the case. Dikla, on the other hand, when it comes to the palm tree, lo nita insha adaita di kora, people are not planting the palm tree at all for the soft shoots for the hearts of palm. Va'afagav dekilsi Shmuel Rav Yehuda. Now the Gemara says that even though Shmuel praised Rav Yehuda hilchsa kavasei de Shmuel, the halacha in fact here follows like Shmuel, that when it comes to the hearts of palm, the bracha is going to be shahakol. Just a couple of quick introductory points before we continue with the Gemara. We are going to be speaking about the Isser of Arla. After trees planted for the first 3 years post its planting, all fruit that the tree produces is going to be Asr. There are two Isserim. One is an Isser of Achil, and the other one is going to be an Isser of Hana'a. That means to say that the fruit that come off this tree during this time has to be destroyed or disposed of and cannot be eaten or can be gotten any benefit from. Arla, of course, sounds like an agricultural halacha, and therefore would seem to be limited just to the confines of Eretz Yisrael. Meanwhile, Arla extends even past Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Eretz as well. Arla applies outside of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara in Kedushin uses the term that the Arla applies outside of Eretz Yisrael as being just simply a halacha. Simple way to read the Gemara over there is that's halacha l'moshe b'sin, and that extends outside of Eretz Yisrael. If you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi does write that the Isser of Arla outside of Eretz Yisrael applies mid Rabbanan. But anyway, whether it's a halacha l'moshe b'sin or whether it's a din Rabbanan, nevertheless, Arla applies outside of Eretz Yisrael. There are a couple of leniencies for the Isser of Arla outside of Eretz Yisrael, which we're going to be going over in the course of today's daf, which we're going to get to in just a moment. But in the meantime, with that short introduction stated, so I'm Rav Yudam Rav. So the Gemara now quotes Rav is saying as follows: Slav Sha Arla. We're talking about the caper bush of Arla, which means to say that this caper bush was planted within the last 3 years. B'chutz Aretz, and we're outside of Eretz Yisrael. Zorikas Avyano. So one has to dispose of the berries, the main berries, because obviously those are the fruit of the Arla tree, and Arla Chutz Aretz applies. However, he does give the following dispensation, and that is you can eat the shells. And so obviously over here, we have to understand what the discrepancy is, why it is that the avionas have to be disposed of, and meanwhile the shells are not to be disposed of. The avionas pere, the karfis la pere. Now presumably, the avionas qualify as a pre, and therefore it has to be disposed of because it's pre-arla, but the karfisim don't have the status of a pre. And meanwhile, the Gemara says, I'm going to remind you of the brisa that we learned earlier. Amine nitzpa, as far as the tzlaf is concerned, ala alim v'ala tamaros, as far as the leaves and the small berries, omer bor pri adama, the brachas of bor pri adama. They are certainly not considered the fruit of the tree. It's just simply an additional growth. V'ala avyonos v'ala kafrisim, but as far as the avyonos and kafrisim are concerned, omer bor pri, the correct bracha is going to be a bor pri. So it is clear now that both the Evyon and the Kafris are considered and qualify as a fruit. And therefore, they should both be subject to Arla. And why is it that the caper bush of Chutz Aretz, you get to eat the Kafrisen even within the first 3 years of its planting? So the Gemara says, meaning Rav, the Amar Rabbi Kiva, he subscribes to Rabbi Kiva. Ditnan, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah. This is in Maitras. Rabbi Lezer Omer, Tzlaf mit Aser. As far as the Tzlaf is concerned, so there is a requirement to take off Trumas and Maestros of the produce of the Tzlaf. Tamaros ve'avyonos ve'kafrisen. Both the small berries and the large berries and the shells on the large berries. So they all subject Trumas and Maestros. Rabbi Kiva Omer, ein metaser el avyonos bavad, min meshu pri. Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion that the only thing that really qualifies as a pre of the Tzlaf is only going to be the large Evyon berry. And so therefore the Tamar, the small berry, and the kafrisen and the shell of the large berry are not going to qualify as a pre, and therefore there is not subject to Trumas and Maestros. And so therefore, since that's the opinion of Rabbi Kiva, so what Rav is effectively saying is that he's holding like Rabbi Kiva. So Venemus of the Gemara says, so why doesn't Rav say that clearly? Halachic Rabbi Kiva, that the halach in fact follows like Rabbi Kiva. E Amar. Halachic Rabbi Kiva, if he were to have said that, Havamin, I would have thought, Afilo Baritz, that would be true even in Eretz Yisrael, Kamash Malan. And the only reason why he said it the way he did it is so that he wants people to understand that this is only a leniency as it applies to outside of Eretz Yisrael. And we have the following rule. Kol hamekel ba'aretz, anyone who takes a lenient position on an agricultural law in Eretz Yisrael, halacha kamosa b'chutzaretz. So we may not adopt his position in Eretz Yisrael, but outside of Eretz Yisrael, we are going to adopt that position. Since the level of our law, albeit it applies outside of Eretz Yisrael, but it's a lower level than that of in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore it affords us the opportunity to be mekel outside of Eretz Yisrael. Aval ba'aretz lo. So the Gemara says, but this leniency of Rabbi Akiva is not to be held of in Eretz Yisrael. V'neimar halachik Rabbi Akiva b'chutzaretz. The Gemara says, okay, but that also could have been articulated by just simply saying that the halacha falls like Rabbi Akiva outside of Eretz Yisrael. The chol amekel ba'aretz halacha kamosa b'chutzaretz, because of the rule that we just mentioned. Iyamar hachi, to which the Gemara says, if we would have said that, havamina, I would have thought, hanimile legabe meiser. Yes, that's true, but that's only true as it relates to meiser. And why should that be? Because Elon deba'aretz gufa midrabanan. Because consider over here that we're talking not about grapes or olives or wheat. We're talking about just simply a tree producing a fruit. Now in Eretz Yisrael itself, that is only a din derabanan, not a din d'araisa. As we said over numerous times throughout Shas, then this is Rashi's pshat, and this is Tosus's pshat, that min haTorah, the only thing that's chayv in Shumas HaMaisers are only going to be grapes, olives, and wheat. But all other produce, all other fruit, are not subject to Shumas HaMaisers min haTorah. So I might have said that this leniency of Rabbi Akiva is only going to be limited to Shumas HaMaisers. So vagabe arla, but when it comes to arla, dibe arts and Eretz Yisrael midaraisa, the prohibition of arla applies to all trees in Eretz Yisrael. I would have said b'chutz arts nami, that the same thing should be true in chutz arts as well. Nigzar, we should make a decree. So kamash malan. So that's what the chiddush is that Rav wanted to tell us that this is not just a halacha that we're going to be passing like Rabbi Akiva as it relates to Shumas HaMaisers, but it's also going to be halacha that we're going to apply to Arla as well, despite the fact that Arla applies in Eretz Yisrael on a Daraisa level, even though for Shumas HaMaisers it does not apply to on a Daraisa level as it relates to the caper bush. At this point in time now, the Gemara now has concluded that Rav certainly is of the opinion that the caper bush of Arla in outside of Eretz Yisrael has a certain leniency. And that is that one, although has to dispose of the avium because that's the main fruit and the arla applies outside of Eretz Yisrael, but one can enjoy the kafris and the soft shell of the caper bush because there is a shita that in Eretz Yisrael it is not going to qualify as a fruit. And so any shita any tenable shita that we have in Eretz Yisrael can be applied outside of Eretz Yisrael. Ravina Ashkecha Lamar Baravashi, the Gemara tells another story that is totally related to what we just discussed, and that's Ravina finds Mar Baravashi. Dikazarik Evionos, he discarded the main berries of the caper bush for Ka'achal Kafris, and he was eating the soft shell. Amrlei Maidaitech. And Ravina says to Mar Baravashi, what are you thinking? Rabbi Akiva Demekel, I see. So you're subscribing to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who is lenient. Valeva Markebe Shammai Demekel Itfei. So if this is true, why don't you subscribe to the viewpoint of Beishami, who is even more lenient? The Tanya, the Gemara quotes the following brace at Slav, that when it comes to the Slav, the caper bush, Beishami Ormim Kalayim Bekarim, that it is subject to Kalayim. Meaning, Beishami is of the opinion that the Slav qualifies in general as a yerek, not as a fruit, but rather as a vegetable. And so therefore, that is going to be subject to Kalayim. One is not allowed to plant Zeraim in a vineyard. Beisel Ormim Ein Kalayim Bekarim. And Beisel is of the opinion that Kalayim is not subject to the tzlaf is not subject to klayim bekerem. And the reason why is because it qualifies as a tree and not a yerek, and klayim does not apply to trees. It only applies to zraim, to seeds that are of a vegetable. Eilu ve'eilu, both Beisel and Beishami agree, modim chayiv ba'arla, that when it comes to the tzlaf, it would in fact be subject to the arla prohibition. Now, haguf akasha. Now, if you think about Beishami's position, it's extraordinarily difficult. Amar, Tzlaf Beishamai Omrim, Kalayim Bekerim. That Beishamai told us that Tzlaf is subject to Kalayim Bekerim. Alma, Min Yerakusa, that clearly tells us that it falls under the category of a vegetable. Vahadratinim, and then, Elav Elamodim, Shechai Barla, that's subject to Arla, Alma, Min Ilanhu. But Arla, of course, only applies to a tree, not to a vegetable. And so, therefore, Beishamai is confusing us, but the Gemara says he's not confusing us. he himself is confused. Halokasha. Beishame sefuga mesafka lehu. He himself is just simply confused. Vavdi hachalachumra vahachalachumra. And he's just simply in machmir on both the halacha as it relates to klai karim and the halacha as it relates to arla, simply because he does not know whether the slaf belongs in the category of a pri, of a ilan, or whether it belongs in the category of a yark. Mekomakon lebeishamai. Havale suffik arla. Now what comes out now is that according to Beit Shammai, the status of a tzlaf is that it is only a suffik arla, because he's not totally sure if it's a tree. He has a suffik if it's a tree. Utanan, and we now operate with the following rule. Suffik arla, anything that is doubtful arla, be'eretz Yisrael aser. So in Eretz Yisrael you have to be machmir because it's a suffik on an issa d'oraisa. Uvis Surya. Now Surya is in the next portion of Eretz Yisrael, but it was kibush yachid. It was conquered by David HaMelech. And so therefore it has a quasi status of Eretz Yisrael. And so therefore the agricultural laws apply in Surya, but on a lower level. And therefore on a suffik arla in Surya, mutar would be permissible. Uvichus aretz. Now, outside of Eretz Yisrael altogether, meaning not Eretz Yisrael, not even Surya, so now there is the greatest room for leniency for anything which falls under the category of Safek Arla. And that is Yored. What you can do is you can go down into somebody's field, V'lokeach, and as we go down to the top of Lamed Vav Lamed Beis, and you can take and you can purchase V'avash Shelo Yiraenu locate. And as long as you don't see the seller going ahead and picking the trees. And Rashi explains over here, we're talking about a scenario where the owner of this particular orchard has got trees that are both old and young. By young, I mean it was planted within the last 3 years. And so therefore, there are fruit in his field that are clearly Arla, and the fruit in his field that are not Arla. And in Chutz Arts, what you're allowed to do is purchase from him, even though there is a chance that he picked from the trees on his field that are Arla fruit. But because we're in Chutz Aretz, and because you don't know, and because this constitutes a suffix, so you could be makel even under those circumstances. And you'd have no requirement to investigate and find out where he got the fruit from. As long as there is a chance that the fruit that he got was from an older tree, so you could be makel. So the question that is on the table right now in the Gemara is that if the Marbar Ravashi is helping himself to a leniency, and specifically the leniency of Rabbi Akiva, why doesn't he help himself to the leniency of a Beit Shammai? The Gemara's response, Rabbi Akiva b'makom Rabbi Elazar avdin and kavasei. If we have a debate between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer, even if we side with Rabbi Eliezer, but we're going to take Rabbi Akiva's position into consideration, specifically when we're dealing with something outside of Eretz Yisrael. Beit Shammai b'makom Beit Shammai ain't a Mishnah. However, when we have a machlos between Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel, Beit Shammai is a position that is totally rejected. It is simply not even up for consideration, even as a lenient position that one can adopt outside of Eretz Yisrael. V'tepekalei denasa shem lepri. So now, as we have gone over the Gemara's discussion regarding the kafrisin, the shells of the main fruit of the tzlaf, which as now we've seen, the Gemara has concluded that it can be eaten outside of Eretz Yisrael, even though it comes from a new tree, even the tree has been planted within the last 3 years. Nevertheless, one can eat the kafrisin, the soft shells of the main fruit. The main fruit obviously has to be discarded because it's subject to the Arla prohibition, but the soft shells can be eaten. And the reason why, as we have articulated, is because the soft shells that surround it do not have the status of a pri. And even though there is a brisa above that said that for the kafrisin you got to make a bori pri eitz, which clearly indicates that it does have the status of a pri, but the Gemara points out that the Amoraim can rely on the position of Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva says that it does not have the status of the pri, and even though in Eretz Yisrael we may not hold like Rabbi Akiva, but outside of Eretz Yisrael one can certainly subscribe to the viewpoint of Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara now is going to be taking an entirely new path in terms of discussing this kafrisin, the shells of the soft shells of the Evyon fruit of the tzlaf, of the caper bush. So we can now say that it's not a pre, or at least outside of Eretz Yisrael we can say that comfortably. But typically, the Nasr Shem Lepre. But the Gemara now wants to know, why don't we make the argument that it serves as a Shem Lepre? It is a protector of the fruit itself. V'rachmana Amar, V'arla Sam, Arla So, Espiryo. The Pasuk, as it relates to Arla, tells us that we have to consider the first fruits Arla, Espiryo, that which is to the fruit. And we have the word es and es atafa lepiryo. And as we see throughout Shas, the word es is a ribuy, and over here it serves as a ribuy as well, and it's including even the shomer. U'mayinihu shomer lepri. It's a reference to the shomer lepri. And so on the table right now is the question that even though the kafrisim themselves don't qualify as a fruit, but nevertheless they should qualify as a shomer lepri, and shomer lepri is in fact subject to the arla prohibition. And we're back now to asking, so how is it that these amoraim can help themselves to the kafrisin of the avion outside of Eretz Yisrael, even if we're going to say that it's not a fruit, but in the very least it should operate as a shomer lepri and therefore be aser? The Gemara is going to go three times over to try to answer this question, and each time what we're going to be trying to do is give a definition to what a shomer is, and we're going to try to make the argument that this shell that goes around the avion doesn't qualify as a shomer. Amarava, so here's our first attempt. Hey, Chamrina Danasa Shomer Lepri, when is it the case that it becomes a Shomer Lepri? Hecha di Isei Bein Betosh Bein Mechubar. That is when it's true, when the shell exists around the fruit, both when it is detached and when it's attached. But Hacha Bein Mechubar Isei Betosh Leisa. But this Kafrisin only is around the fruit when it's detached, when it's attached to the ground. But once it's detached from the ground, the shell falls off, and therefore this does not qualify as a shomer. Eitzvei Abai challenges this definition based on the following. Pitma shel rimon. So when talking about the pitum of the rimon, the small little crown coming off the top of the pomegranate, mitzarefes. So that will combine with the pomegranate, meaning here we're talking about tumas ochlin. As we said numerous times throughout Shas, tumas ochlin, if you have a kebetza, the volume of a beitza of food, it then becomes subject to the transmission of tuma, and in terms of the volume of the fruit, so the fruit and its shell combine to get to the volume of a kebetza. And the Mishnah here is to tell us that even the pitum, even that little crown on top, combines to get to the shear of a kebetza. The hanetzalayim mitzarif. Now, as far as the netz is concerned, netz is a shell that grows around the pomegranate while it's on the tree and while it's developing. It sheds before the fruit comes off. Now the fact that it's not a shomer, sorry, the fact that it's not mitzaref tells us for sure that it's not edible. V'tanya gabi arla. Now as far as the halachas of arla are concerned, klibiram v'aneshalo klibe goes in v'hagarinim chayav v'arla. A number of things over here are subject to the arla prohibition, and the first thing mentioned in the list is the nates of the rimon. The nates of Rimon is going to be subject to Arla. Now let's think this through. Why should the nates be subject to Arla? Now it's not edible, so it's not because it's a fruit. So the only thing that really makes it eligible to become subject to the Arla prohibition is the fact that it is a shomer. So Ella Amarava. So now we see that the nates of the pomegranate is considered a shomer, despite the fact that it is not on while both attached and detached. And so therefore, our working definition of a shomer seems to be incorrect. So the Gemara now is going to be giving a second working definition of what a shomer is. Ela amarava hecha amrina denasalu shomer lepri hecha di isa b'shas gemar pri. Haikafras leisa b'shas gemar pri. So in this now new definition of what a shomer has to be something that surrounds the fruit while it's on the tree and all the way to the point where the fruit has arrived at full development. That means to say that it doesn't have to be on the fruit while it's detached, but at least on the tree it's there, both at the developing stage of the fruit and even at the gemar pri, even at the finished stage of the fruit while the fruit is on the tree. Again, the Gemara challenges this as well. The Hamar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravu, Ahani, Metachle D'Arla. Asire. The Gemara here is talking about some shell that grows together with the date while the date is on the palm tree. And the Gemara says that this metachli, these soft shells that are around the dates, are going to be subject to the arla prohibition. Hovan asa shomer lepri, because it qualifies as a shomer. V'shomer lepri emas have bikufra. And meanwhile, these shells that surround the dates are only there at the early stage of the development of the dates. V'kakar le shomer, and yet it is considered a shomer lepri. So the Gemara now has presented to us a problem, because now we see that even though the shell is around the fruit only at the early stages, not at the later stages of development, yet it qualifies as a shomer. And that would seemingly go against our working definition. So the Gemara says, Rav Nachman Sevela K'Rav Yossi. So the Gemara says, well, maybe this position of Rav Nachman that we just learned together is in accordance with Rav Yossi. None. We have a Mishnah, Rav Yossi, Omer Smadar, Asar Mimneshu Pri. That the Smadar is going to be Asar because it's a Pri. Smadar is a grape that is at its early developmental stages. And Rav Yossi describes that as a Pri. And so therefore, the Shomer that goes around it is also going to be a Shomer Lepri, because according to Rav Yossi, even a fruit in its early developmental stages qualifies as a Pri. Upligi Rabban Aleha. But meanwhile, the Chachamim argue on that. And since the Chachamim argue on Rav Yossi, so that means that the Shomer Lepri is only going to qualify when the fruit is considered a Pri. And according to the Chachamim, that's only at the later stages of development, but not the early stages of development. Maskel Rav Shimi Minarda. Now the Gemara says, now you're making an assumption that the Chachamim argue with Rav Yossi on all other trees, but the Gemara now is going to prove to us that that's not so. V'atanan, the Gemara here quotes the following Mishnah. This Mishnah over here is talking about Shemitah. During the Shemitah year, one is not allowed to destroy fruit. One has to eat fruit but cannot make any kind of hefsed ochlin. Fruit during the Shemitah year has Kedusha Shemitah, Kedusha Shvius, and so therefore can only be consumed and not destroyed. And so if I have a fruit tree, so once there is fruit on the tree, I'm not allowed to touch the tree because that would create a hefsed of the fruit. At what point in time am I not allowed to cut branches down on a fruit tree in the Shemitah year? When it comes to all trees, Mishiyotziu. From any emergence of the fruit. Beis Hillel Omrim, and Beis Hillel says, well, it depends on the tree, and it depends how much development we're talking about. Hacharuvim mishi yisharsharu, the carob tree, when you get to the point of sharsharu, not exactly sure what that is, but it is a early stage of development of the carob tree. Vagafanim mishi yigaru, now as far as the gefen is concerned, so that is when the grapes are very small. Vahazesa mishi anitsu, as far as the olives, when they start budding. Vishar kolonos mishiyotziu, when it comes to all other trees, at the point of any emergence of the fruit. Va'amar Ravasi. And Ravasi teaches us, hu boser, hu garur, hu pula lavan, that the word boser and garur are synonymous terms. So even though in the brisa we just learned together, when it says the gefanim are mishiyigaru, that is synonymous with the term boser. And it's also pula lavan. Now this term pula lavan does not make sense in this context. Pula lavan, sakadach, and immediately the Gemara jumps on that and says, what are you talking about pula lavan? Pula lavan is a bean. We're talking about fruit over here. Elaim shiura kupula lavan. So the Gemara says, for clarification, it just simply means that the shear is that of the pul halavan. Anyway, man shamalei da amar boser in smadar lo. Now, who was of the opinion that said that a grape is only considered a fruit at the point of boser, meaning a later development, and not smadar rabbanan? So that was the Chachamim, not Rabbi Yossi, the Ketani. And in this very same brisa that we just learned together, it taught us, Shar Kolonis, by all of the fruits, Mishiyotziu, that at any point of emergence, the fruit qualifies as a Pri. And so by Shemitah, that means that you're not allowed to touch the branch. And now in our discussion, that would also mean that by our law, it qualifies as a fruit. And that means that the shell that's around it is going to be a Shomer Lepri. And here we are now stuck once again, because as we're trying to give definitions for what is a Shomer Lepri, it comes out now that even in the second definition, the kafrisin does qualify as a shomer lepri, and so therefore it should not be eaten because it qualifies as a shomer lepri. And yet, the question goes all the way back to Mar Baravashi, who in fact ate the kafrisim of the Arlas Chutzaretz. So the Gemara says, Hecha de kashach le shomer, ela amarava. Sorry. So the Gemara now, and this is going to be our third definition of what a shomer lepri is. So now our third working definition of a shomer lepri is that when I take the shell off of the fruit will not survive. But over here, as it relates to the tzlath, when you take the kafris off the avion, you will find that the avion can still sustain even after the shell has been removed. And so therefore, with our third and working definition of what a shomer is, so the shell that surrounds the evion, the main fruit of the tzlaf, is not qualified as a shomer, because the fruit can survive even after the kafris was taken off. This is going to be a satisfactory definition, and with this, now we can explain how it is that the kafris does not have the status of a shomer lepri. Hava uva devashaklul anates the rimona v'yavesh, rimona. And the Gemara says that empirically we see that this is in fact so. They took the nates. That was that developing shell that surrounded the pomegranate while the pomegranate was at its early stage of development. The nates was removed off the pomegranate, and the pomegranate shriveled up and died. V'shaklu l'pircha de tivisa, de bitisa, v'ikayim bitisa. And meanwhile, the kafris was taken off of the avion. The Gemara here uses the word bitisa to describe the avion. The kafris with the soft shell was taken off the main fruit of the caper bush, and it survived. And with this, now we have a working definition, and now we can satisfactorily explain how it is that the kafris does not have the status of a shomer lepre. V'hilchasa, now over here, the next lines of the Gemara found in the parentheses, which probably means that this is not the original text put together by Amoraim, but a later addition by either later Gaonim or early Rishonim. Hilchasa, the Gemara says that the halacha is kamar baravashi to zarek es havyonis v'achal es hakafrisim. We do, in fact, subscribe to this rule of mar baravashi that during the first 3 years of the caper bush, one can, in fact, eat the soft shells, of course, having to discard the main fruit as they are subject to arla, but the soft shells would be fine for the reasons that we already articulated in the course of this daf. Number one, it's not a pre, and so therefore it is not subject to arla. And number two, it's not a shomer lepre, as that we have been working our definition of what shomer lepre is, and based on our finished definition of shomer lepre, this does not qualify as a shomer lepre as well. And then the Gemara continues, and with Ilgabe Arla la Perininhu, and since by Arla it's not a pre, Ilgabe Brachos nami la Perininhu, so therefore, as far as the Bracha is concerned, we're also going to assume it's not a pre. And when eating the soft shells, the bracha is not a bari pri eitz, but rather the bracha is going to be a bari pri adama. Adkan, that is the conclusion of the Gemara. I say the Gemara over here probably, again, it's not the Gemara, but it's probably a later insertion. Interesting over here, you can take a look at Tosfos, where Tosfos, Divra Maskel v'Hilchasa, does not actually agree with this conclusion of whoever inserted the parentheses. In fact, he says that in terms of the bracha is going to be a bar prey eitz. The fact that we are going to be mekon chutza aretz, that's only for the reasons that we articulated early in the daf. Because of the rules of anyone who's mekel in Eretz Yisrael, you could subscribe to his position in chutza aretz, but it's not necessarily that we say definitively that it is not, in fact, a fruit. And so therefore, for arla, we could be mekel, but for, as far as the bracha is concerned, the bracha on the kafrisin, on the shells of the Avion are in fact a Bori Priya, it's not a Bori Priya Adama. Okay, let's quickly recap our daf. We started by addressing the technical question of how a person can imbibe olive oil as a drink, as a sustainable drink. The bracha is clearly a Bori Priya, it's just a question of how somebody's going to be drinking olive oil in of itself. And the Gemara spent a lot of time coming up with the Nukimta over there. Our second topic of discussion is ground wheat flour, and what would be the appropriate bracha to make over ground wheat? Well, wheat flour, Tosha says that it was toasted a little bit so that it can be so that it's edible. So, is the bracha going to be a bori pri adama, which is the bracha we would have made over the wheat in its natural state, or because it went through a shinoi, because it went through a change, maybe the bracha should be a shahako, but no longer a bori pri adama? And the Gemara deliberated that point as well. We talked about the hearts of palm, and what should be the bracha of hearts of palm. The two options amongst the Amoraim is either it's going to be a Bori Priya Adama or it's going to be a Shahako. As we already explained, the reason why the Gemara never entertains a Bori Priya Eitz is because it is not the main fruit that is produced by the date tree. The main fruit, of course, is a date. And so therefore, the only thing that's going to get a Bori Priya Eitz is only going to be a date. But as far as other derivatives of the tree, so generally speaking, we make a Bori Priya Adama. However, the consideration the Gemara had is that by the hearts of palm, it's detrimental to the tree to remove the hearts of palm. And in fact, if you left it there, it would harden and actually turn into the tree. And so maybe the bracha should not even be a bori pri adama, but rather a shahakol. The Gemara over here concludes that the halacha, in fact, follows like the opinion of Shmuel, that the bracha of hearts of palm should be a shahakol, with my own speculation that maybe the bracha nowadays would be different, because we do, in fact, make the hearts of palm specifically for that purpose. We plant it specifically for that purpose. The Gemara spends a lot of time talking about the slough over the course of today's daf, the caper bush, where there are numerous edible parts of the caper bush, the main berry, the evyon, the shell that is around it, the kafris, the small berry, the tamra, and the edible leaves. And on these, so it is clear to the Gemara that the edible leaves and the small berries are not considered fruit. They don't qualify as a fruit, and therefore the bracha is bori pri adama, and therefore it's certainly not going to be subject to the arla prohibition. But what was up for a lengthy discussion in today's daf was the kafrisin, the soft shells that go around the evion. And so the Gemara spent a lot of time discussing that outside of Eretz Yisrael, even though the prohibition of arla applies, nevertheless, many Amoraim help themselves to eating the kafrisin of the new caper bush trees, even though they've been planted within the last 3 years. Now, why should that be? So the Gemara spent a lot of time describing why, number one, it itself is not a pri, even though there are some Tanaim who subscribe to the idea that it's a pri, but nevertheless, it itself is not a pri, and number two, it's not a shomer lepri. And the Gemara spent some time also giving us a working definition of what a shomer is and what a shomer is not.